Good morning. In your health on this Monday, we'll talk about treating severe asthma without medication. First, how to increase access to healthy food in low-income neighborhoods. You may have heard of food deserts, those areas where nutritious food can be hard to find, but fast food may be plentiful. In recent years, there's been an effort to build better stores in those neighborhoods. But as NPR's Patty Naiman reports, a new study suggests that just building stores may not be enough.
There's a glistening new supermarket in a low-income neighborhood in Philadelphia. It's in a community that used to be a food desert. But today, with over 45,000 square feet, the new store brims with healthy choices, including lots of fresh fruits and vegetables. But researchers wanted to know if people actually shopped there.
The presumption is that if you build a store, that people are going to come.
Stephen Matthews is a professor at Penn State University. He surveyed residents of the community before and after the store opened, and what he found was something of a surprise.
We don't find any difference at all. The fruit and vegetable consumption patterns, both before and after the store opened, were similar. We see no effect of the store on fruits and vegetable consumption.
Now, to be fair, the time was short. The store was only open 6 months before residents were surveyed. Matthews says most knew the store was there and that it offered healthy food, but only 26% said it was their regular go-to market.
There's many other things that have to accompany that. It can't just be, we build it, they're going to come. It has to be paralleled with other kind of interventions that perhaps are more targeted, both at the store or at the community or at individuals.
Matthews says building the store is just the first step. What needs to happen next is something that's actually happening in many states across the country. Take this corner store in East Los Angeles.
Una libra, va a querer.
Gracias.
The Euclid Market is part of a public health research project at UCLA that converts corner stores into hubs of healthy food. And here, UCLA public health researcher Alex Ortega says they're doing a lot more than just converting the store.
We've had cooking demonstrations where we've prepared smoothies, healthy snacks, fruit salads, vegetables and green salads, quesadillas that are loaded with vegetables.
Cooking classes are actually inside or just outside in front of the stores. Cooking class is only part of the project's reach. High school students learn about nutrition. Posters touting the benefits of fresh, healthy food hang in the stores, on billboards, and at bus stops. Ortega says nutrition education is critical because without healthy options, many residents never really learned how to prepare healthy meals.
I had a mother who approached me to tell me that she had learned a lot from the cooking demonstration about healthy eating, and that because of what she learned about nutrition and about reducing saturated fats and sodium and increasing fiber intake in her diet, she lost 20 pounds and her daughter lost over 10 pounds.
An important achievement in an area rife with obesity and all of its related health problems, including diabetes. Data is still being collected at the UCLA Corner Store project, but the hope, says Ortega, is that creating demand for healthy food along with access will make the difference in what residents eat and ultimately in their weight and health. Patty Naiman, NPR News.
If you ever get a chance to visit China, you discover something as soon as you go out to eat. Many classic Chinese dishes in American restaurants are not available in China. American Chinese food is not really Chinese food, but an Americanized version of it. Take General Tso's chicken. When you get to China, you might learn that you're pronouncing it wrong. It's General Chow's chicken. And next you learn you can't get it. It's American. As a result, there are Americans in China who miss Chinese food, or at least Chinese food as they remember it. So, a restaurant offers to provide expatriates with authentic American Chinese. NPR's Frank Langfitt visited the Shanghai restaurant called Fortune Cookie.
At lunchtime, Feng Lam relays orders to his local chefs. It's just like his family's restaurant back in North Jersey, where he filled takeout orders as a teenager, even down to some of the very un-Chinese ingredients that have helped make this hybrid cuisine so palatable to Americans for decades.
We're American-style Chinese food, so a lot of the ingredients like Skippy peanut butter, Mott's applesauce, like things that we use, were never made in China, so we just had to find the product here.
What do you use the applesauce in?
We use it in our sweet chili sauce that goes with the spring rolls, and then also duck sauce.
The Skippy goes into fried noodles and fried rice. The secret behind that Chinatown standard sweet and sour sauce?
Off the top of my head, about like one third of it is Heinz ketchup. Yeah, and that's like what gives it that like bright red orangey color. Yeah, it's a Heinz ketchup.
Hi, my name is David Rossi. I'm originally from South Pasadena, California.
Rossi is Lamb's business partner. They met studying for a master's in hospitality management at Cornell. The pair came here in 2012 to open a restaurant that focused on healthy food. When that ran into trouble, they decided to offer the only kind of cuisine they couldn't find in Shanghai, American Chinese. Food bloggers ridiculed the idea.
Lines like, you're going to try to sell, like, you know, ice to Eskimos.
A lot of people called us, like, crazy and just, they were, like, banking on us closing in under 6 months.
8 months later, Fortune Cookie is still open. Lamb believes there is a market among expatriates here, nostalgic for their hometown takeout. People like Megan Emery Moore, who teaches art at Shanghai American School. Emery Moore grew up in Missouri, where she waitressed at a Chinese restaurant.
And they had amazing sweet and sour chicken. So ever since then, I was always like, I gotta get some more that's just like that.
Which is what she's eating right now.
It's kind of embarrassing that you're in China eating American Chinese food, but it was like spot on.
And kind of comforting.
I feel calm. I feel relaxed. I feel like I'm at home.
Chinese people make up about 40% of the lunch crowd at Fortune Cookie. George Zhao, a management consultant, likes the beef and broccoli's ordered. But he says, in general, westernized Chinese food lacks the subtlety of the original cuisine.
The sweet and the salt pork. The pork is too sweet. In China, we don't eat food this sweet.
A few booths away sits Jack Zhang, who works in advertising. A Chinese colleague brought him here to taste a new kind of food. This is the sound of Zhang eating his first fortune cookie.
He's kind of frowning and thinking.
This is like glutinous rice, he says. It also tastes like a street-side pancake. I've never been to America, so I'm not quite clear about this thing. That's because fortune cookies are also unknown here, as are those little white takeout boxes with the wire handles. In fact, the restaurant's Chinese staff found both so intriguing, they took them home to show their families during the recent Lunar New Year. Frank Langford, NPR News, Shanghai.
At this time when we're constantly told to watch what we eat, it's almost gospel that skim milk and low-fat yogurts are better for you. But if you looked at some parts of the dairy industry, you'd see that in places like the organic market, sales of full-fat dairy are up. Maybe organic buyers had the right instinct. Two new studies have a counterintuitive finding. People who make a habit of consuming high-fat dairy tend to be leaner. NPR's Allison Aubrey reports.
Breakfast time can be noisy at the Kaladi home in Charlottesville, Virginia.
It's really crazy in our house between 7 and 8.
No, that's not a chainsaw. That's a blender. And like a lot of families, the Kaladis love smoothies. So what did they toss in today?
It was full-fat yogurt, a banana, and some ice.
You won't find fat-free in this home. Full-fat yogurt is the norm. Martha Kaladi says she and her husband and their two kids like the taste better.
It just tastes richer and not watered down.
And she thinks the fat naturally found in dairy is good for her kids, especially since they don't eat much meat.
They're both fairly thin and very active, and so I didn't see any need to eliminate those calories.
Kaladi is not alone. Increasingly, moms like her like the idea of eating whole foods, unprocessed. If you take the fat out of milk, what else are you losing? Now, many researchers say this is a good question, and especially since several new studies have found, perhaps surprisingly, that people who eat higher-fat dairy tend to be leaner than people who stick with skim products.
I would say it's counterintuitive.
That's Greg Miller, a scientist with the National Dairy Council. He says, consider new findings from a big independent study. Swedish researchers analyzed the eating habits of a few thousand middle-aged men. They found the men who ate fatty butter and high-fat milk had lower rates of obesity by the time they reached their 50s and 60s compared to the men who seldomly or never ate cream, butter, or fatty milk.
This finding is consistent with a lot of other observational studies that show that higher dairy fat intake is associated with reduced body fat.
So the question is, why might this be? Well, it's possible that high-fat dairy makes people feel full, so they eat less. Or, Miller says, maybe it's something more complicated.
There may be bioactive substances in the milk fat that may be altering our metabolism in a way that helps us utilize that fat and burn it for energy rather than storing it in our body.
Now, clearly there needs to be more research before folks are encouraged to eat more dairy fat. After all, the original recommendations to limit it were driven by concerns about cholesterol. And most experts would say that adults with high cholesterol should stick with low-fat alternatives. But how about children? The American Academy of Pediatrics recommends that kids switch to low-fat dairy at age 2. But pediatrician Mark DeBoer says this high-fat dairy paradox has been documented in children, too. He studied the milk habits of some 10,000 kids in the U.S. and found that those who drank low-fat milk were more likely to be heavy.
The thing that struck us the most, first of all, the American Academy of Pediatrics recommends that children drink low-fat milk specifically so that they won't gain weight over time. But when we looked at what happened over time among those who were drinking the low-fat milk, even those who started normal weight were more likely to become overweight than those who were drinking higher-fat milk.
That's actually quite sounds surprising.
It really surprised us at the time.
So given all of the recent evidence, some experts say it might be best to revisit the assumption that fat-free dairy is always best. Alice Naubrey, NPR News.